From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 380, an IT pro guide to DevOps with guest David Tassar, recorded Thursday, July 17th, 2014. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is David Tassar. And he started out at Microsoft back in July of 2002 as a support escalation engineer for networking and directory services, and then moved to the role of a premier field engineer in Washington, and since 2007 works as a technical evangelist for the Global Developer Experience and Evangelism team based in Redmond. DevOps is currently David's primary focus, working with customers and internal development teams who create various applications primarily built on Microsoft Azure. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Yeah, happy to be on the show. Thanks for inviting me to come.
My pleasure. And I got to say, the PFEs have been a great source of knowledge for the Run As audience. Guys that have been out in the field fighting the hard fight and collecting those stories has been a lot of fun for me, just to get some real insight on the kinds of challenges out there.
Yeah, PFE is a fun role. Definitely lots of traveling, lots of good customer interaction there.
Yeah, and yeah, working on hard problems. So we're talking DevOps. It's a recurring topic in the show. And it seems to me like the Microsoft community is starting to get this, that this is going to be a big thing. You actually led the pre-conference workshop for DevOps at TechEd?
Yep.
What did that look like, a whole day workshop? What's the order of things when you want to get up to speed on DevOps?
Yeah, well, you know, part of the thing as far as the pre-con we wanted to convey is that, you know, the role of the IT pro or operations people is really evolving, right? DevOps is not just a trend or a fad. I mean, it's really a big evolution in the way that everybody's doing business, right? I mean, customers are expecting these days that, you know, software is shipping regularly, weekly, monthly, right? They're getting frequent updates to their apps and the website. And, you know, that requires a response really from the business to meet those needs of their customers, right? I mean, if you are a customer out there and you've got somebody who's a very high performing organization, you know, you're going to see some statistics from Puppet Labs reports, for instance, says that you're going to ship code 30 times faster and complete deployments 8,000 times faster than their peers.
Right.
Having 50% fewer failures and 12 times faster than their peers. So you think about yourself and your organization, and if you're not kind of operating at that speed, you're going to be left behind, right?
Well, I think the big thing here is your boss read that report and says, why aren't we like this? You know, you're telling me I not only can get features faster, but at higher quality? This is crazy. Although what you've just described sounds like a development conversation more than an operations conversation.
Yeah, and that's something where, you know, I think that a lot of people aren't aware. I mean, there is definitely a role for the IT or ops person, even in traditional role today, that they can play across the entire application lifecycle. And that's part of, in our pre-conference seminar, kind of what we talk about is, you know, what is the role that an IT guy plays in planning, development, you know, deployment? Obviously, operates a natural one, but what does that, you know, evolved role really look like for the person?
Yeah, my background, I've done a lot of high-performance websites, and every time we've started planning a new version of the site, we need the ops guys in the room because we talk about new stresses we're going to put on the infrastructure and what new features are going to demand of the infrastructure. And if you don't have that conversation in the beginning, you get to have it at release day when all hell breaks loose.
No, yeah. You know, the old school way of doing things, right, is development just goes on their own path and doesn't involve ops. And then come time to deploy to production or staging, they say, oh, here it is. And, you know, the ops person has to kind of deal with it and hope that it all goes the same way. That's really doesn't work in the new DevOps world, right?
So how much of this is just a cultural thing of involving people sooner and having more conversations of it, and how much of it is actually tooling?
Yeah, so I mean, that's one thing that I think is a common misconception, right? I mean, a lot of times, you know, you'll hear people saying that it is a tool or a product, right, or a set of products. And the reality is, you know, DevOps is about people, process, and products, all three of those things. And I would also argue in that order as well, right? If you've got, you know, the right people, you know, informing, let's say, a team of folks that are operating in a different way, then from that flows different process. And then, you know, the tools is kind of almost, I feel like, the last step of things to try and move it forward, right? But let's say if you flip that on its head and you've got somebody really passionate about using some particular product and the people in the process isn't there, it's not going to work, right? No matter how amazing the tool or tools are.
I know I've seen somebody advertising DevOps in a box, and it just makes me cringe. You know, it's like, because in some, you know, this gets back to that whole boss dynamic. Boss wants this, and it's like, hey, I just buy this product, you push this big red button, and it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's definitely not what we believe at Microsoft, that's for sure. Despite what you may hear, who knows if you hear something like that, but, you know, there's definitely things that products can do to help you.
Sure.
Definitely. You know, and you know, in the pre-con and the content that I present, you know, that's when it gets to the nuts and bolts, that's a lot of what people want to hear about. But there's certainly a lot of, you know, people and process work that's got to happen first to really make things move.
To kind of set the culture of getting everybody involved early and a certain level of understanding. But I got to think that in the end, operations is still operations. You're not going to start writing the website. You are going to be familiar with where it's going. But when it comes to operating it, in my mind, it's just, correct me if I'm wrong, two pieces, the actually managing deployments and the true operations part of how do you instrument an app? How do you know how healthy it is? And how do you feed that back to the dev team to make it better?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of new things that I think the ops may have not considered, but one of the things, for instance, is operations being more heavily involved in release management, right?
Okay.
You know, so for instance, an ops person may help set up continuous integration, continuous deployment. An ops person or may help with the infrastructure as a code, right? I mean, you know, you're used to dealing with the IT people are used to, a lot of them are used to automation and PowerShell scripts. Well, why not take those PowerShell skills that you have and write, you know, a script that deploys all the infrastructure for your app, right? And being involved with that in, for instance, the development phase, right? So working with the engineers and saying, hey, cool, I'll help you, you know, get the infrastructure as a code in development environment. And then when it comes time for production, guess what? And, you know, it's pretty straightforward. It makes life a lot easier to kind of move it between those phases, right?
The other piece that you're seeing more and more with the really productive companies, and I'll throw Office 365 into this group too, Exchange doesn't seem to have version numbers anymore. There's just new features appearing on a routine basis. Like, you just don't have that big bang deploy happening anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I would say Office 365 is one of the early pioneers of operating in that model, you know, where it's, you've got a website where they just tell you, hey, here's the stuff that's we've been releasing, like, you know, the past week or month or whatever, right? Azure is really that way too, right? I mean, there's new stuff all the time happening in Azure and you know, behind the scenes as well as in the user interface and stuff, right?
There's almost a whole conversation to have here about, are we going to shift to a routine deployment model? Do we, you know, like, I would have to talk to marketing. If I'm not shipping a big version every on a regular basis now, or, you know, once or twice a year, we're going to steadily triple these things out. Then, you know, how do you tell that story to your customers?
Yeah, I mean, it's the new world that we're operating in. I mean, I don't think there is one staple answer there, right? I mean, different companies handle it in different ways.
Sure.
And I think, you know, we'll start to see what that looks like over time, right? You know, it's kind of makes me think of the whole, a little bit like Windows Update, right? You know, Windows Update, we have Patch Tuesday and we release all the updates.
Yes.
And, you know, that, you know, it's like almost kind of like an old discussion in a way. It's like, well, you know, how often do you really want updates? I mean, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Well, why did we wait till Tuesday to patch this significant bug? Why not the moment we saw it, if we got the patch fixed, we want to deploy it?
Yeah.
There definitely is a mindset around that. Or, you know, there are a group of folks out there that's like, until the service pack, I'm not patching anything.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Although, the way I've been describing it lately as I work with different teams is everybody has scars. It's just a question of what your scars look like. When I meet a guy who's like, service pack one is the first time I install anything, and I won't take anything on until the next service pack comes out, it's like, I think I've heard this story before. What server, you know, what hot fix burned you that you have this scar around daring to install anything that's not a service pack?
Yeah, you know, and that kind of, you know, the patching thing brings up an interesting conversation too. I really feel like evolution of the world we're in is moving, you know, more towards PaaS and SaaS in my mind, and things in a DevOps model, because, you know, there, you don't have to sit there and patch anything. That's all kind of done behind the scenes, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's more of like, hey, you're enabling new features and new functionality on the fly. You may be fixing some stuff, but you're not really so much worried about Patch Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
For your application.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's where I think, you know, I mean, ops can definitely help, and I think they, you know, almost like an evolution. You know, virtualization's, you know, what, 10 plus years ago.
Yeah.
You kind of move to, you know, call it private cloud or public cloud and the likes, you know, in our cloud OS story, and kind of running things on any workload. And I think that's part of the evolution. But beyond that, right, it becomes really operating at a high speed scale. I mean, that's part of what DevOps is about, right? Multiple deploys, releases a day or a week or whatever. That really helps quite a bit. You know, with like PaaS, for instance, you know, you can literally in a second, and you can now scale to 10 instances of the thing and have no downtime, right?
Although it means you have to have software to do that. But this certainly speaks to the idea, you know, it doesn't just happen for free. Neither does rolling updates happen. I mean, I've gotten lucky that I, through the .com boom, worked with these websites that couldn't afford a minute of downtime. And so not only we had all the DR stuff, but the rolling update model, that was voodoo back then. But now it's kind of an expected model. You can't take my site down to put the new version up. People have to keep buying. So
yeah,
and that's totally an operations effort of how you stage those updates.
Absolutely. And, you know, like, I mean, I think, you know, this is a good example of where, if you're planning on your site scaling or having, you know, big marketing push or whatever, you know, you ideally really want to work with development, and even in the planning or development phases, and saying, well, hey, this is our goal. That could influence, you know, where you decide to put your application and how you're going to scale it, right? Even I could see, an ops or an IT guy working with developer on a load test, right? The developer would probably write the load test, but the ops guy may define the auto scaling policies and help with that infrastructure, and, you know, have that good relationship with the developer to where, you know, before you hit that, you know, huge push of traffic coming to your app or your site, you've kind of got a better assurance that that's going to be able to handle that load when it comes time to really hit the road with it, right?
For sure. I mean, we definitely want to push those updates at quieter times, because you're going to split your overall infrastructure. But that whole conversation about, all right, you're going to move to version 3 of the shopping cart, so I'm going to have guys running shopping carts in version 2. When I deploy to a portion of the farm to version 3, these guys hop across. What's the conversion step look like? And then I'll keep them stuck to version 3 websites only while I finish rolling the rest of them out. Like that, I love that. That was so much fun to build. I mean, every deploy was kind of innovative that way. But what a great conversation between what development does and what operations does, and what the DBAs had to do too. You know, databases went through multi-stage conversions then from one version to next, where there was a state in between 2 and 3, and then sort of cleanup done once we were all the way across to 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're also seeing, I mean, another cool thing, I think that's an emerging trend that's coming up, I'd say, almost for folks who who kind of have a really well operated DevOps model or are in that space is kind of this concept of flighting or A/B testing, and where, you know, you can release, you know, certain features, right, feature flags or whatever, and release some of those and direct part of your traffic to that particular thing which is in production. I mean, it really kind of changes the notion of that we only have, we have this, you know, four tiers, you know, dev, QA, stage, prod kind of thing, and you move it through there. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? But the you look at the Bings and the Facebooks of the world, and the way that they operate, right, is on this flight model where they'll release, you know, to 1% of the traffic to this, you know, new thing that's out there and get live feedback on the site, right? I mean, that's something from an infrastructure perspective that is definitely a lot more complex, where an ops person could really help out. And, you know, Microsoft has some things like, you know, the Azure Service Gateway that we have in the gallery that can help out with that.
And just, you know, marketing folks A/B test ads all the time. Why shouldn't we A/B test a feature? Or, you know, are many of them just to try different versions, see what people actually like?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of, I think, the nature, right, of one of the goals, the underlying goals of DevOps is really to try and get the right things that your customer is desiring at a quicker speed, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, not just kind of having this big 6 month or whatever push and thinking you know what they want, and then maybe, you know, 2 months later you adjusting, but kind of on a regular basis, you taking that feedback and having a slower cycle time from the point of which, you know, you know what the customer wants to delivering it to the customer, and operations plays a part in that most definitely. You know, not just from a, hey, it's broken, but hey, look at this. We may have, you know, you may set up the system, for instance, that collects all the telemetry from what users are actually using on the site and give that back to development.
Right. The feedback piece to me is one of my favorite parts of this whole conversation around DevOps, because everybody gives feedback, or every project gets feedback somehow. It's just a question of how quickly and of what quality. You know, maybe your only feedback is a guy telling you how much your software sucks in the hallway.
Yeah.
But to actually automate it and make it routine, to get production errors fed back directly to development automatically, so that there's less debate, there's less time wasted, you know, right away stuff that's going on in production from your code.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's something, you know, I mean, first thing comes to my mind from a technology perspective is our application performance monitoring, or APM, product that we've had for a while in System Center. Now that same kind of technology is available in Application Insights,
right,
where you are, you know, getting down to that code level, like, hey, this is where it's causing a slow delay, and you could, you know, because you know exactly where the bug is in the code, you can pass that right to the developer, right? And
yeah,
there's not as much, you know, this whole finger pointing kind of game. It's like, hey, here's what it is, and let me know what I can do to help, kind of thing, right?
Well, yeah, I like the automated piece. I've demoed APM. I went back when it was still Avicode, and you know, the big conversation point for me was when Ops writes a bug report, Dev criticizes the bug report. You know, is it enough information? Can you reproduce it? I mean, you get that whole debate because it's an interpretation of a failure. When a tool like APM takes the error that occurs in production and feeds it directly to TFS, there's nothing to debate. This is what happened in production. Whether or not we can understand it and fix it's a different question, but you just suck the air out of that whole argument.
Yeah. And I mean, and this is partially where, you know, comes back to, if you're really operating in a, the people in the process side of DevOps model that is more conducive to those principles, you know, what we see a lot of people doing is they'll have a dev and an ops person, have shared accountability, right? They may be on the same team for whatever's being pushed out there. So, you know, the kind of no blame, postmortem type of concepts and whatever, and it's, That whole culture is kind of where I think a lot of people are headed.
We got to get away from this idea that development is done when they compile, right? Like that's to me the only measure that actually matters is the customers are using the new feature and hopefully like it. And that's folks involved to get to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like work together, right? I mean, it's you're part of the same company. You should start operating like that, right? I mean, let's achieve more things for the business.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I think, you know, is also another thing that's part of DevOps that you don't always get even see mentioned. Like one thing that frustrates me on the Wikipedia definition of DevOps is it doesn't include business. It's like, well, you need to have those three things working together, business, developers, and operations to kind of achieve better things for your overall organization, right? And you know, one example of, you know, that we mentioned the bug finding thing is, like, for instance, like, you know, an ops person might help set up, let's say, an Azure website slot where, let's say the bug does happen and something goes wrong, you know, they have a plan to quickly fail over to, you know, an old slot, right? Or fail forward to to a known working version or whatever very
right.
quickly within seconds, you know, and that's something, you know, an ops person could help out and set up. And so that way it's this kind of pressure off and everybody's happy, right?
Yeah, it's always when everybody's in the room, what's the fastest solution to this problem? What's the short-term fix to keep people operating and the long-term fix to reduce overall cost on this problem?
Yeah. And
I think there's a lot of everybody in the room. I love this aspect of business. So I feel like when you get devs living in their silo, they don't care about business. And we have IT living in their silo, or ops living in their silo, they don't care about business. But when you're trying to create common goals between both of them, they end up having to describe it in business terms.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only way for them to have a common goal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's obviously, you know, and that's one of the things, you know, sometimes people use the CAMS or comms thing for describing DevOps, and the M is measurement, right? I mean,
right.
It's super important that, you know, if you're trying to move towards DevOps principles, that you have a way to measure, you know, your improvements, because sometimes to the business, you know, they may not see so much results right away, but under the hood, you may have done a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
You may be able to now, you know, let's say spin up a dev test environment in like 3 minutes. But the business doesn't really, you know, at the first time you get that done, they're not going to necessarily see that yet. Now, maybe a month or 2 months later, they might see, oh, wow, you're shipping faster. But,
right.
You know, having some defined goals, whether it's, you know, mean time to detection or, you know, number of releases or whatever, these things are really important. And to have those shared goals with the business is really important, too, to have success on your DevOps team. Right.
Yeah. How many times have we been celebrating some cool thing in technology that business understands? And because we haven't built the metric to show its business impact, they just don't value it. All right, great. You could spin up a VM in under 2 minutes. But if you don't have a business metric around that, why'd you do it?
Yep. You gotta have a plan. And that's the thing too, you know, like it's DevOps, there's so many different areas of making improvements. I think if you say, oh, we do DevOps and we're kind of done, then you probably don't get it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like there's always more things to do to kind of improve your situation. And it's not always going to look exactly the same for every company, right?
No. Yeah, it does seem to be owned. And it reminds me of a lot of the Agile movement 10 years ago, where lots of people were saying Agile without actually doing anything. And then it was very hard to measure that. And the word got very sullied. I think it's still very sullied. And I'm worried that DevOps is going through the same process. Everybody's got their own interpretation, and you have to own what you want to do and how you want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk a bit about the Microsoft Virtual Academy? Because I know you've done the workshops. And we got one coming up too, right? Tech Ed Europe in October?
Yeah. We have, you know, I'm in planning mode right now for possibly some MBA courses in the meantime,
right,
until October, which I don't have any details on yet. But for sure, we have the pre-con coming up at Tech Ed Europe,
mm-hmm,
for DevOps. That's definitely happening. We have also online today, we have the MBA course on DevOps for IT pros, which is really kind of like 100 to 200 level, I would say.
Right.
Which gives you, you know, but like probably, you know, 4 hours or half day of content or so around, you know, what role more technically does an IT pro play across the development life cycle. So we give a lot of specific technology examples of where, you know, you could play a part, and hopefully that could spark some ideas for you in, you know, inside your own organization. We also kind of lightly cover the open source side. You know, it's one of the other things I think is important for folks to know, is that, you know, Microsoft especially in this new world, right? We realize there's a lot of other people using other things that are outside of Microsoft and that we need to interoperate. And I think especially with DevOps, you know, we see a lot of people who have existing investments in, let's say, Chef or Puppet or other DevOps tools that are not Microsoft, and that's fine, right? I mean, if that works for you, great. You know, part of the course that I have kind of shows you, you know, where some of our technologies fit and where the open source technologies fit in the application life cycle. And hey, maybe there's like one tool that you could use from Microsoft and continue on with the other things you have that are working for you.
So about a month ago, we did a show with Steve Murawski, who's now with Chef, and talking about a desired state configuration, DSC, working with Chef. Like, just that interplay is really interesting. And it's embracing the reality that we have mixed environments to work in. You've got some Linux boxes and some Windows boxes, and you want to manage them all.
Yeah. You can run Linux on top of Azure, right?
Sure.
I mean, like at our build keynote that we had this last year, right, we showed an iOS app on stage, and the only part that was Microsoft was the Azure mobile services on the back end, right?
Right.
So, I mean, it's a new world that we're living in today, right? I mean, cloud first, mobile first type of deal, right? Where it's the way things are going.
Yeah, and it's fun to see where folks generally working and playing well with others to bring all these pieces together so that for the folks out in the field, we can actually get stuff done. I got nothing bad to say about Chef. You know, I really do like the way its overall management. I'm not a huge Ruby fan, but, you know, you can learn it just like you can learn PowerShell. It's not that complicated. You just got to take the time to get down to it. I do think that's a big piece we're seeing in DevOps is that operations guys are getting more programming skills, not building big apps, but just speaking in code to be able to do their configurations in a repeatable way. Do you find when you're teaching this stuff, you've got to have a certain amount of conversation about code?
I don't see, you know, an ops guy needing to be a developer. Most
right.
Definitely not. But you know, I think that's where, you know, most IT folks and ops folks are used to automation concepts, and a lot of them may use some form of automation scripting, right? I mean, PowerShell is kind of the most common one, but, you know, it could be other things too, right? I mean, so taking some of that type of knowledge and then, you know, translating that into kind of the DevOps model is something I definitely see a lot of people using. And when I've done talks, I mean, you know, most IT pros, I mean, obviously are aware of it and most of them are using it in some capacity. It's more of like, hey, just use those skills, learn, you know, to create, let's say, infrastructure as a code or do that automation to help with the end-to-end life cycle in some way. And that really, you know, can help you evolve in your skill set and moving towards a DevOps space.
I also like it when it gives appreciation for what the other group does. Like, having ops guys write a little code to sort of start, they now have different conversations with developers about problems.
Yeah.
The same way that I found when I put a dev in a firefight on a Saturday, you know, when a site's down. So, how they contribute may be different, but there's no doubt that at the end of the battle, when it's over and we're back up again, they're like, wow, stuff's hard. I'm like, yes, it is. All our jobs are hard.
Yeah. And you know, it's one of those things too, right? I mean, even if you're following best practices, you know, like I, for instance, I didn't really, you know, I don't know, maybe a year-ish ago, I didn't really know much about source code, you know, control, like
right.
Git and TFVC. Well, I now know Git, right? Like, I'm not like a Git expert, but I have to know Git because I need to be able to, let's say, push my infrastructure as code scripts up to the source code repo, because that's right, the best practice, as well as just doing basic stuff like, hey, I want to make sure my continuous integration and deployment's working. I need to know some fundamental stuff there, right?
Right.
An ops person needing to learn a little bit there, but you know, it's just kind of other examples where it's, you know, the IT person always has to learn, and there's you know, things that you got to do, you know.
Yeah, and start to value that. The source code one's really interesting, not only because I totally agree with you that there's a best practice around creating a common complete package that source code, data, schema, configuration information, all living in a common place so that it's manageable, deployable, and so forth. But once you get your head around how good source control systems are at keeping a history and creating common repositories and things like that, there's all sorts of stuff we should be storing there, not just code.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, if you, you know, I did my, when my tech ed North America session, Transform Your IT Skills in a DevOps World, right? I mean, I demoed how I could deploy a full application from a PowerShell script and get source code control in like 3 minutes, right? I mean,
right.
The website, the SQL database and all that. It's like, you wonder why the developers are going around the IT people's backs. It's like, well, hey, you know, they can do that. I mean, that's a possibility, right? So it's kind of almost to a certain extent a wake-up call to the IT folks, right? Like, if you're not aware of that, you need to be, because, and you should be helping with that, right? And as opposed to just letting the dev guy kind of go around your back and push stuff up there.
Yes. Yeah, and you've seen that. The problem now is that there's enough automation that we can build alternatives, especially in the cloud, and make us really feel like an obstacle. The cloud automation trick with Git and Azure is like outsourcing ops the same way they outsource development offshore. Like it and just as disruptive. I think it helps focus us in, as you know, whether you're a developer and operations guy, you're not on the line. Like, you're not actually the source of revenue for the company. So, you know, we got to keep remembering that the things we do have to help the people who do make the money. And they will go around us. They have a lot of choice now. It is really an interesting world in that respect. So the IT Pro Guide, this is a free resource on MVA?
Yeah, it's a free course on MVA, the DevOps for IT Pro Guide. It's the kind of the 4-hour course that you can go through module by module, and you can, you know, do a check certification assessment if you're done, one get points or whatever. After you're done there, and then if you want kind of you don't want to go through the longer course, and you want more of a 75 minute kind of deal, there's also the session, like I mentioned, that I presented at Tech Ed North America, Transforming Your IT Skills in a DevOps World, which gives, you know, it's a much more condensed view, but it gives some gives you kind of an idea there from the Azure side of the world. The course, the MVA course, will give you the on-premises view as well, including like System Center, Lab Management, and Visual Studio Release Manager, which I didn't really cover in the Tech Ed session I delivered.
Cool. David, thanks so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate your insights.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.